Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Kia ora koutou, everybody. Welcome to Caucus for this week, Thursday. It is 2 weeks and a bit until election day. If you're listening from overseas, you can go and vote now if you're here in New Zealand. Advanced voting starts on the weekend. So we are, and it feels like the party, this whole kind of campaign party thing's come to life this week, isn't it?
Yeah, or some people may have debate fatigue, depending on what they've been watching, streaming online, watching on various channels, Māori TV, obviously News Hub's one. Tim's unshaven, if you're watching. I feel like this must be the home straight.
It must be the home straight. Welcome to Caucus. I'm Tim Watkin.
I'm Lisa Owen.
I'm Guyan Espiner.
And I'm Scott Campbell.
It's great to have your company today. So, as you say, Lisa, debates, debates, debates. Let's start with the big one on News Hub last night. Paddy Gower moderating. Judith Collins and Jacinda Ardern as the two leaders to be covered. What did you make of it?
Well, I think the winner on the day was actually News Hub with a much superior broadcast, and I think probably got more out of the contenders. In terms of the two contenders, well, I'd call it pretty much a tie, I think.
Yep.
They were both playing to their respective audiences. Judith Collins, I think, was trying to get more of her zingy one-liners in there, her eyebrow-raising and personality punches. But I don't think anyone landed the knockout blow.
No.
I thought Judith Collins probably gained more out of the debate than Jacinda Ardern, because I think she put in a very strong performance and put in quite a bit for those who might be centre-right voters but were wavering, were perhaps either not going to turn out, was considering switching over to Labour or to going off to one of the more fringe parties or to ACT. And I think Judith Collins, with that kind of performance building on the TV1 debate, may have stopped the rot for National a bit and may even have gained a little bit, in my view.
Because the debates don't always really move voters.
No, and I didn't think the first one did at all, was my view. But I think that Collins will have gained some momentum from that. I thought they were both good, and I agree with Lisa. It was great TV. Kudos to TV3. Mm. It was really well done. It was a good debate. I felt good about our democracy watching it last night. I thought both leaders...
the American one in the afternoon.
Exactly.
But there were some snips and snides and backbiting like...
But that's okay.
I watched the American debate.
Yeah, yeah.
And... were they that dissimilar in terms of some of the barbs that were fired? Probably not.
I think
and
some degrees were hugely, don't you think?
Well, some people don't like that, but debate is about that. You do cut across people.
Contest
in debate.
Of ideas.
It is a contest of ideas. So I'm fine
finally,
with the robustness of it.
And finally, we got one, right? And I guess that for me was the politics at the end of the night was the winner. And and I think, both of them had their wins, I think, throughout that debate. Absolutely give kudos to the fact that the production was a lot better. But I actually think watching it, you can see that that Simon Bridges and Todd Muller wouldn't have been able to pull out those performances. No disrespect to those two, but they wouldn't have been able to stand at the podium beside Jacinda Ardern and do what Judith Collins did. And I actually think, if anything, it's a good thing for us that we have two potential leaders who I think last night looked decisive at moments. Judith Collins did, I think. Jacinda Ardern, I'm still not sure on this idea of I can't give you an answer on the cannabis reform one. That still bugs me. But I actually thought both of them
did well. I just could not care less. I could not care less. One person's vote in a referendum, you can debate the principle of what she's doing. Her principle is that because that legislation has not been through select committees and has not been, fought out yet, she's not going to take a stance on it.
I think that's a cop-out. I think it's a total cop-out. And I'll tell you why I think it matters is because it speaks to this larger problem that I have with her style in politics, where she's not... putting a stake in the ground and fighting for something. To me, politics is about having an idea and then fighting for it. And I put it alongside a capital gains tax type thing where she never fought for that. And I think you should put up your policy agenda and fight for that. And to be going into an election, refusing to say which way you are personally going to vote on the cannabis referendum, I just think it's a cop-out myself. I get why she's doing it, because she doesn't want to frighten the horses, but I think it's a cop-out.
Yeah, even the frighten the horses argument, I think there's a gross inconsistency there, because obviously last election debate from the same television network, she came out saying she was going to decriminalise abortion, which is highly controversial.
And she's got a view on the euthanasia.
And didn't have legislation. Yeah. But the euthanasia referendum, the legislation is in place. There's no changes to that legislation. She's already voted for it in the House.
On the issue of abortion...
Cannabis is still a debate to be had.
Understand that. But abortion at the time that she raised it and came out in the debate saying that she would decriminalise it, in fact... made it an issue central to the election campaign, even though Andrew Little was the one who then took responsibility for managing it, if you like. I mean, that's highly controversial with some of Labor's more conservative voters, say in Pacifica community in particular. She, as Guyon said, put a stake in the ground, told us where she stood, and away she went, right?
I think that's the best argument I've heard so far, actually, against that. But she would say probably what? I'm Prime Minister now, and I have to... go with what the
electorate
says.
Prime ministers are just people too. Whatever law, no matter how controversial, if Parliament signs it off or it's a binding referendum, she's still got to put it into place.
She does.
Yeah, and that's where the cannabis reform one still has to go before Parliament. So if she is only one vote, well, then tell us what it is, because it's not going to have a huge impact on the rest of the community. What I found really interesting last night was the policy on the hoof that was coming out. That was fantastic.
Well, let's get into some of that, because we've got some clips here from, and the hoof stuff was really interesting. One of them was that it seems that Judith Collins now, with our first grab on the wage subsidy, Judith Collins is going to pass a law to get some of that wage subsidy back from the companies who have been receiving it. Listen to this.
Big companies took millions of dollars in taxpayer cash, then laid off workers and are now posting huge profits. Sky City, Briscoe's, Somerset Holdings, to name but a few. My question to you is it fair, Jacinda Ardern, is it fair that they have done that?
No. And I expressed my view at the time when I heard that the warehouse was one of those groups who was taking a similar position. You know, the wage subsidy helped retain 1.7 million people in work. And it may be within the rules to do what these companies are doing. It doesn't mean it's in the spirit of fairness.
So it's morally wrong what they're doing?
Yeah, I think it's wrong.
Judith Collins, I'll come to you on that. Do you think it's morally wrong as well what those companies are doing?
Yeah, I believe that $500 million a week, which is pretty much what it is, that's the same amount of money to build a regional hospital like Hawke's Bay or Dunedin or Christchurch. If people don't need the money, they shouldn't have taken it. But then again, the rules should have been more carefully put in place, but they should pay it back. It's not fair. New Zealand taxpayers are going to hock to pay for that. It's not fair.
She went on to say after that she would actually legislate to get that back, and she was asked about that on Mike Hosking's breakfast show this morning.
All right, you seem to introduce potentially a new law somehow to claw back money on the wage subsidy. How does that work?
Yeah, that was a big call, I thought.
did you know you were going to make it?
Well, I didn't know I was going to get that question.
So, Scotty, this is your point. She didn't know she was going to get that question. She clearly made that up on the spot.
Yeah, and big call. it is a big call, because that'll scare a few people, right? And I think one of the, I wish that my profits were huge enough that I had to pay it back as well too. But the wage subsidy scheme for those businesses throughout lockdown was a godsend, and it helped cash flow and the ability to retain those jobs, right? And I think that's fair. Both of them, though, it is good to see that. Let's assume that Judith Collins is not going to double back any further. If she is going to stick to it, this will be the trust factor.
Can she actually deliver a law like that?
Well, if she was the Prime Minister, how could she not? Like, surely she could pass some type of legislation.
Retrospective law is pretty bad law, isn't it?
It would be really hard when you think about it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Because you've legally taken the money, and you can't go around policing people on morality. And then to retrospectively create a law saying we're going to grab the money back would be impossible. It ain't going to happen, is it?
No.
And she knows it's not going to happen. And she laughed about it there because it's not going to happen.
Pretty big call, Lisa.
A big call because she desperately was trying to say the right thing. That's the power of those debates when you put the heat on people. I think she promised something she can't deliver.
Yeah, and speaking of calls, I think she should have been called on it on the night, because the reality of the situation is that National has supported the wage subsidy, right, all the way along. So at that point, when there was quite a tense moment there, where she was talking over Jacinda Ardern, saying things like, why did you allow this to happen? Why did you let that happen? Well, okay then, Judith Collins, you support the wage subsidy, have supported the wage subsidy. How would you have made it different so it couldn't happen? Because it's not that easy, especially if you want to get money out to a significant number of businesses quickly. And also, as Guyan points out, if they've legally taken the subsidy, you'd be shifting the goalposts to get it back off them.
What you could have done, I suppose, is pile the money out the door, saying that there will be audits of this and there will be decisions made about whether money can and should be repaid. You know, you could have a clause in it, couldn't you? You could have had a clause in it saying this will be subject to auditing and possible repayment if an independent advisor says that the money wasn't needed, whatever.
Yeah.
You could have, I suppose, had more of a catch-all thing there. But look, you know, that's possibly being wise after the event. As you guys have all said, and Scotty said this a number of times and has more personal experience with it in the business community, that was a godsend, and it had bipartisan support.
And there are audits, and people have paid it back. Several legal firms who were basically shamed into paying it back have paid it back.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how those companies who were named and shamed last night respond today. Scott as well. Pharmac, an investigation into Pharmac was promised on the hoof by both of them. An inquiry into Gloria Vale was promised on the hoof
by Judith Collins.
I was interested. There was definitely policy from Collins. There was a distinct different approach to COVID. We talk about this being a COVID election. And she was definitely taking a looser borders approach in that first thing, which is interesting. She talked about getting rid of the gun register, which has only just come in. So some quite significant policy differences, I thought, came through.
Well, she's pushing this line of I will deliver, though, right? And that's essentially the difference at the moment, I think, that she is trying to put up, which is, trust me, I will deliver it. These guys over here say something, they come up with all the nice words, and they've got these nice and fluffies, but they don't deliver. And I think that's for me, is what she was trying to get across. The gun register one, well, how do you take something away that's not even there yet? And that was part of the issue, I think, last night, that she was trying to get across. Interesting on the Pharmac one, and again, when it came to the cancer drugs, and good on Patty, I think, for calling them on it, which was, yeah, well, 200 million, but then by the time you take 50 million a year for Keytruda, there goes all of your cancer drug funding. So I think it was good to see them come up with some new ideas. I think that contest of ideas was good to see.
Yeah, I think they both agreed, didn't they, to an investigation into Pharmac.
Yeah.
Yes,
so that's going to happen. And it's something that I've looked at quite closely over the last 18 months. And one of the things that came through time and again from all interest groups was that this government agency has never properly been reviewed. There have been, you know, looks here and there, but it hasn't had a fundamental review in a couple of decades of operation. So I personally am going to be very interested in that. And this will happen now because they've both promised that. And I tell you what, the people who have got strong interest, and because it's life and death for these people, they will hold the Prime Minister to that. There will be an investigation into Pharmac. They won't let that go. The Pharmac people have been watching that very closely last night, and they will be preparing for this now because it's going to happen.
Yeah,
and I think that was possibly the biggest policy thing to develop last night.
And it came out, and it was interesting, you talk about the families. One of the most memorable moments for me for the night was Judith Collins' response to that and her own family being involved with this. Let's listen to this clip about Judith Collins' brother-in-law.
get this, Pharmac says it will cost $50 million a year for Keytruda. That's all of your money spent, and that's all of your money spent, and it's only one cancer. The simple fact is neither of you can help the people out there with cancer in New Zealand right now.
With that sort of money, you'd have to say, Paddy, you've got to get people diagnosed really early. And my brother-in-law was like some other people who couldn't even get in because of the lockdown and got told over the phone that he had terminal cancer. That's what's happened.
She was genuinely on the verge of tears.
Yeah, and look, you know, that's really sad, and that must be awful when you do. I mean, I winced again hearing it. The thing that's interesting to me is that Judith Collins has really tried to tell us a bit more about herself in these debates.
Yeah.
I think you were mentioning before, Tim, before we were talking in our pre-caucus chat.
Indeed.
That she's mentioned her faith, her Christianity, a number of times. We've heard about the Samoan husband. She hasn't had the time, has she, to do the what you often see in the magazines and things when a new leader comes. And she hasn't had that time. So she's been trying to squeeze in these little elements of her life and to show the different sides of her personality, I suppose. And, yeah, look, I think that probably, you know, that won't have done much harm at all.
Let's underline that with a grab, because the Winston Peters she talked about briefly, and miracles came up in the debate as well. And this is where the faith came in again.
Now I want to turn to leadership, starting with you, Judith Collins. Quick question, is Winston Peters irrelevant?
Yes.
Jacinda Ardern, is Winston Peters irrelevant?
It would be a disservice of someone I've worked with for that long to describe him in that way. But ultimately voters are going to make that call, Paddy.
Okay, so voters might make him irrelevant is your answer. Judith Collins, do you rule him out then? Is there no way, even with some miracle that Winston Peters gets back, that he would ever be involved with any national government new leader? You ruling him out totally?
As a Christian, I do actually believe in miracles, but I tell you what, he ain't going to be one of them.
I found this really interesting because I'm not doubting her faith, but the decision to include it in the debate, I think, is an orchestrated strategy on her part. Earlier in the week, we heard her on Faith repeatedly, mm-hmm. and this was in respect of Nikki Haga. She'd made a comment about Nikki Haga meeting his maker. This is the investigative journalist. And some people took exception to that because they thought it was a threatening kind of comment. And she explained at great length on Morning Report that her faith as a Christian was that at the end of her life, she would meet her maker than everybody else would, and they'd have to justify their actions during their lifetime at that point. And so as a Christian woman, this is what she believed. I think she's making a very strong pitch for certain votes out there that might be in
the
Pacifica community, maybe Conservative Labour voters who might like the look of her, potentially New Zealand First voters who might have more Conservative views as well, and the Conservatives, because they've got a few percent and every percent counts at the moment.
Yeah, and that came through pretty loud and clear when she started talking about the children who who are abused and who are murdered. And there's the right to silence and people being prosecuted for not opening up to police during those sorts of investigations. I think she was really hard on that. And again, whether or not it's going to be feasible or able to be done, she was strong. And I think that a lot of people are looking for that. And you hear it constantly in the news about these types of issues. And I think, yeah, I agree. She's going for that type of conservative vote, which is now hanging out there, given that the New Zealand First one is gone. And she's trying to pick up on that a little bit, I think.
So I think there's a clear line through running through all these points. She was fruit picking last night. She just went from basket to basket. She had gun register, ACT Party voters who have left National to go to ACT up to 6, 7, 8%. Boom, got a tick to get them back. Conservative, new Conservative voters who have left National to go and have that faith-based approach to politics. I'm a Christian, I believe in miracles. Tick.
Labour voters who might be uncomfortable with euthanasia and also maybe uncomfortable with cannabis.
Yep. And law and order, and she spoke also strongly to the rural base about the farmers paying for all the drugs and paying for our economy. Tick, get them back from New Zealand First, the people who are in the rural communities who have been done well from the Provincial Growth Fund and have been looking at New Zealand First. So she went through and ticked every box of the parties she could try and get votes back from. That's why I agree with you, Guy, and that was her. She did well out of this debate to be able to harvest, fruit pick all those all those votes?
I think that's good analysis, actually, and I agree with that. And I think that's why she is the winner. I don't like to sort of score a debate. Did she win the debate? Well, who really knows? I personally think, as I said initially, she gained a lot more out of that, and that was quite clever strategy. And she probably didn't scare off any of her actual voters, the National Party sort of base. So, yeah, I think she may well have stopped the rot. The game really is to keep National in the 30s, isn't it? Or as close to 35 as he can. And I think she went some way to doing that last night.
Yeah, I suppose Labour will be sat there chomping on their nails in some part, thinking, whoa, we delayed the election flip. Lucky it's not that
soon enough for them, can it?
Yeah, lucky it's not that far away, because Judith Collins is in essence running out of runway. If that wasn't the scenario, I think that they would be worried about what kind of momentum she can get.
The other point on that is that, you know, it is a COVID election, and it comes after 3 years of this incredible emotional connection that Jacinda Ardern has created with the electorate through crisis after crisis. Her crisis management has been so, you know, well received. But another thing we saw in this debate last night, I think, that if Labour was running purely on its record, they would be struggling a lot more. The key things that she, you know, that this government was supposed to stand on, child poverty, climate change, they don't have a, you know, housing, those three big things, their track record is not great.
Yeah, and I think that's where the Prime Minister, well, Jacinda Ardern, tried to really rely on her Prime Ministership at the start of that debate. And so I think if you have a listen to the first few answers, she talks about, well, my experience is this, and this is what we actually did do. I found it really interesting when she walked in. I don't know if you saw it, but she rolled up her sleeves, and it was almost like, game on, I'm here tonight. I actually think she did well last night, I think, to be able to not respond to a lot of the taunts, because Judith Collins was throwing muck at her constantly throughout that debate. And I think she did well to laugh it off. She was very conscious of the cameras that were on her constantly. And I think, again, though, I think she could have been more decisive. And this is where I think Judith Collins was giving us pretty straight answers. Jacinda Ardern was running around all over the place and trying to have that nice smile and, trust me, I've done it before.
I agree with you in part, but I like numbers, detail, right? So I feel that there were a couple of times there where you're calling the incumbent to account for their record, that it shouldn't just be an opportunity for the opposition to rag on them. They need to present an alternative. So I think we were lacking in some measurables or KPIs being extracted from the opposition. For example, if you're going to say your housing record is shit to Labour and Kiwi Build was crap, you then need to turn around to say to Judith Collins, first term, how many houses are you going to build in the social space?
27%, she's right, 27% house price increase under this Labour government, but how are you going to get it down from that?
Exactly. And give me some measurables, give me some KPIs.
Places, and that, I thought this was fascinating, it hasn't been picked up as much. In some places, house prices has to drop, Judith Collins.
Yeah, which places? Where? Well,
exactly.
By how much?
That's a phenomenal statement from the National Party leader.
And how are you going to make it happen? You're all about property rights.
Yeah. They keep coming back to the RMA, and the one good argument around that sort of space is the Christchurch example. They use it a lot, but that they got their act together there. They opened development for land there, and the amount of supply meant that the prices did drop or at least plateau there. So that's their argument, isn't it? They keep coming back to RMA.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Let's have a listen to Ardern, because just this clip about her ideology, and the one time, one of the very few times she actually pushed back on Collins was probably one of her strongest moments. Let's play the ideology clip.
But now's the time for us to look to what the new energy opportunities are for Taranaki. The world is changing. Unfortunately, Judith Collins does not want to change with it. Unless we move quickly, we lose an opportunity.
Look, if Jacinda Ardern is going to use my age against me, I'm happy to use my experience.
It was
I'll
not
tell you
age,
this. I'm not going to say...
It was not
to
age, Judith. It was ideology, and yours is Taranaki. Outdated.
That was a strong line, and I think that's one of the ones that actually stuck for her. And she was so, like you're saying, Guy, and she doesn't fight often, but that showed a little bit of fight for at least one question.
From the Prime Minister?
From the Prime Minister.
Yeah.
Your ideology is out of date.
And she said the same thing in the first debate, didn't she?
But she nailed it this time.
About farming. She mashed it
the first time. Yeah. This time she actually got her point across.
Yeah, she did. Although it wasn't a bad comeback from Judith Collins either.
And witty, too.
Yeah, and she showed wit. I agree with Scott that this Simon Bridges, Todd Muller would not have had that quick-wittedness and that fire and the sharpness that Judith Collins had?
I like that one line about, is Phil Twyford an asset or a liability? And she sort of said, well, he's an asset for me and a liability for her. I thought that's a good line. But what do you make, and I've heard all sorts of people commenting on this around this idea of Miss Ardern and these sort of discussions around the ageism stuff. Well, what's your views on that? Is she using that as a strategy, or is it just...
Yeah, probably. Well, you've got to work out what to call them, don't you? And then we read into that.
I think she's not using her name because Jacinda's name is like a brand.
Yeah.
So she doesn't want to reinforce it. The world over, it's an unusual name.
Jacinda-mania.
And it's the Jacinda-mania, and that is a name that has become known overseas. So she's wanting to neutralise the Prime Minister's brand.
But why not Ms Ardern then rather than Miss Ardern?
Well, I suppose Helen Clark was Miss Clark.
She was.
So I think it is a way of keeping her at arm's length, putting her in a certain place. And I'm interested in your take on this, Scotty, because there was a couple of times where arguably Judith Collins, she got her snide on, right? When she
Well, let's listen to one of those. When she asked about, she said, what are we talking about, dear?
And so all the talk, all the fluffing around about emergencies, tell you what, actually, it's got worse,
What's
not
your
better,
plan?
Under this particular
what
leader.
What is your plan?
What for, dear?
Climate change.
Climate change. Okay, well, I'll tell you what.
Scotty?
Snide remark. But again, I guess who's she, to your point earlier around apple picking, well, who's she trying to play to? And I guess that there is a part of the community that will say, would have agreed with her. Well, who is this younger, jumped up, person who's sort of saying, what's your plan? What is your plan? And it was, I think in some ways it was Judith Collins said, take me as I am, right? In the analysis afterwards, she said, well, that's just me. That's how I talk. And I guess we are starting to see more of her. And I don't read too much into it. I thought it was a bit of a snide comment when it came out. If she actually meant it, then I guess that's where the problem would come in.
She called her on manners as well, as in Judith Collins called Jacinda Ardern on manners for interrupting her.
Manners.
Yeah. So I found that interesting. And I think we've talked before at various points about the female vote in respect to John Key, right?
Yep.
The undecided women who were seen or believed to have bolstered John Key's vote. And I'm wondering where Judith Collins sits with those voters, given those kinds of remarks and given the brand that Jacinda Ardern has created for herself in terms of wanting a better style of politics, not wanting a blood sport, having a kinder style of politics, juxtaposition.
Yeah.
The phrases that Judith Collins was using.
Yeah, it's tribal, isn't it? We all know people like Jacinda Ardern and Judith Collins in our own lives, don't we? We know the woman of Judith Collins' age who turns up and speaks that way, and we know the progressive younger woman like Jacinda Ardern. So I think people, you either identify with that or you don't.
Yeah.
And
certainly if you look at social media, both bases loved their leaders' performance.
Yeah. So I think and it's what I liked about the debate last night is you're getting that. You're getting the centre-right, stronger woman, and you're getting the younger, progressive centre-left leader. And so, yeah, it is.
Any big winners and losers for you guys?
Well, there'll be a couple of people who'd be pretty happy. I imagine David Seymour, who's supposedly been anointed as Deputy Prime Minister if they get there.
She was coming for his vote, though.
Yeah, but he's a spectacular operator or something like that, isn't he? That's what she said.
True. That's true.
I think what it showed last night is that there's an obvious choice of either Labor and the Greens, and or National and ACT.
So,
that's what last night told me.
So one of the losers is New Zealand First because they were dismissed out of hand, and you're dismissing them now.
Well, they weren't a part of the debate other than one question about Winston Peters.
And Jacinda Ardern really used all her skill and agility to get round that in a respectful way, I thought.
I thought it was well done.
Addressed the Winston Peters question.
I thought it would have looked disloyal. I liked that answer from her.
Yeah.
Saying, well, I worked with the guy for 3 years and I'm not going to
rag on him and
write him off. Whereas Judith Collins was questioning his immortality.
I felt sorry for Fielding, just saying. presented as the meth hub of the universe by Paddy. Fielding is a great town, got to say. About 20 years in a row, it was the most beautiful town in New Zealand. Don't bag Fielding.
I think you mentioned the losses, who were the losers. One thing I would point out, for both of the leaders, nobody had a plan B around COVID. What happens with the borders if we're sitting here ad infinitum waiting for a vaccine? Jacinda Ardern said that's never going to happen. The science tells us this, this and this. But neither presented a credible plan B, and I don't really think either of them attempted a plan B. And the other thing, in terms of paying back the debt which was raised, neither of them had a solid answer to that as well. They both went to growing the economy, but we know from statistics that growth has sat around a certain level for about the last 40 years and nobody presented an argument or an idea as to how they're going to get it over that 3%, which seemingly they're relying on in order to pay back the pootia. No details.
No. So Ardern said more apprenticeships, but Collins said more tech support.
But there was, but they both shared the same gaping hole
in
terms of those things.
If anything, I think the winners on the day are the election campaign. Because for me, what last night did was put a bit more spark into it. And whether or not they'd had a few more coffees before they got into the theatre or whatever it was. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were talking about the battle of the boring. But now it's actually, we've got game on. I still think that Labor, it's obviously theirs to lose. But now at least we've got a debate.
And that COVID thing I thought was interesting. I mean, we haven't talked about that much and none of the commentators have, but it still struck me that, you know, in an environment where the polls have showed that New Zealanders have really liked the conservative approach we've taken, Collins was quite bravely saying, you know, if Christchurch had an event like Auckland had now, I would not put the rest of the country into lockdown level 2. I would keep things open.
But she'd put the South Island into lockdown.
Well, Christchurch at least. But she was certainly saying I would contain that lockdown.
And she
approach
always
more than
she
Ardern.
Always prefaces everything with if it's safe.
Yeah.
So you don't actually get a definitive answer. She's playing.
But there was a difference there.
Minute. I actually think they're close to agreement in terms of the way those things have been handled, and I think National has struggled to differentiate its approach to COVID by saying, well, we don't have all the information that they do. If it's safe, we'll do this. So no definitive answers how they would handle it.
Well, you don't really want to differentiate when the government response has been internationally lauded, really, and we're all sitting here going, gee, we're lucky we're not in just about any other country in the world.
No,
so why would you want to distance yourself from that? And as Lisa
surprised.
Says, I mean, that's the difficulty. It's a COVID election and the government's done well on COVID and that's really the most important thing in it, isn't it?
So any other debates this week that you saw you wanted to raise, guys, or do you want to go straight to Winston?
I think we should go straight to Winston because he was, you know, the elephant in the room or not in the room last night.
Yeah, so we've had, obviously, the SFO has had its play this week and let's just hear how Winston Peters responded to the news earlier this week that the SFO has laying charges against two people involved with the New Zealand First Foundation.
Okay, thanks for coming. Today's decision by the Serious Board Office, being announced right now, exonerates the New Zealand First Party of any electoral law breaches. Having fully investigated the allegations, the SFO has cleared the New Zealand First Party, all of its ministers, all sitting members of the New Zealand First Party, all candidates standing for election, and all party employees of any wrongdoing. It's a relief after months of this cloud hanging over the party that we have been fully cleared.
Fully cleared when two people have been charged.
Who are not MPs or members of the party, etc., etc.
Yeah, well, he's claiming that the foundation and the party are completely separate. So why would they be sitting MPs or ministers? I mean, it's classic Winston Peters, isn't it? And the first response is to use the courts and go back to the courts. Where were we last election?
Yeah,
we were. His super had been overpaid, and so what did he do? He sued government department leaders, National Party ministers. and tried to take legal action against journalists involved in it. It's the classic recourse to it.
And he went on to say how outraged he was by the announcement. I guess the big hole for me in the argument is, how can you get to say, I have been exonerated and I'm outraged for being exonerated? You can't say both of those things, right? I mean, if he's outraged at
He's
the
outraged
fact,
about the timing of his exoneration.
But surely the counterfactual is that they didn't say it and the cloud of uncertainty hung over him until the election, rather than him being exonerated and the voters knowing that he was clean. And if he genuinely thinks he was exonerated, then this is a great thing for the SFO to have done, surely.
What we didn't know when he was giving that statement at 5 o'clock was that they had been in court for the last week trying to basically gag the SFO and suppress any announcement of what had occurred, not only until the election, but until the formation of a new government. So you would have had that scenario where you go into coalition negotiations not knowing any of this stuff about these. The public wouldn't have known it either. And again, I go back to 2017, where he was negotiating in good faith with the National Party, and we didn't know that he'd actually filed papers suing Paula Bennett and Ann Tolley the day before the election, from memory.
So what about the timing? Yeah.
Well, it's a trust issue, though, isn't it? And that's part of the problem. And I think this one goes back to previous elections, where there have been similar types of clouds that have been hanging over the party. And when you think about it, that Jacinda Ardern and Judith Collins were both also asked about the SFO last night, and both of them had a response. And Jacinda Ardern said something along the lines of, oh, you know, we've all had our issues there, or along those lines. And I think that's the difference. If you look at both of them, and how they approach the SFO question versus the Winston Peters one, I think it comes down to the trust issue. How many people will trust what he is saying? It's not us. It had nothing to do with us. It's a couple of people outside of the parliamentary wing. And I think that's his issue around timing.
But Lisa, you know, it's reasonable to raise. Oh, there we go. It's reasonable to raise the questions, right? Is it how appropriate is it for a government agency and a law enforcement agency to make statements just 2.5 weeks out from election? He made the Comey comparison with Hillary Clinton. Is it the right time and the right place?
It would have been further out from the election if they'd been allowed to make the announcement on the 23rd, which is what they were going to do. And look, these allegations were passed from the Electoral Commission to the police and then to the Serious Fraud Office back in February. So what's the argument? That they've been too slow, too fast? And what do? They're damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they hadn't made any announcement, then they're doing that for political reasons. If they do make an announcement, they get accused. So, you know, I mean, they're reticent to take cases as SFO, aren't they?
The counterfactual is that you didn't say it when they knew it and they hid this information from voters.
I'm very strongly on this. I'm a journalist. I believe in transparency. So when the information is available, it should be made public as soon as it is practical to make it available.
Yeah.
I find it absolutely extraordinary that a sitting member of parliament and the deputy prime minister tried to gag the Serious Fraud Office. Utterly extraordinary. So I believe it should be in the public domain. People
and fight the case again. If you're exonerated, then we'll all know, because when the information comes out and the names are released and the full facts are there, then he's going to be able to stand and fall by that.
And if he wants to make that argument, name the people, presumably, if he knows and tell us, because that's a key piece of information we still don't know.
Just as a sidebar, I find the use of the word exonerate to be very interesting as well, because, that's a proof-based thing. So what we have here is some people are charged and some people aren't.
The bottom line for me is that voters deserve as much information as possible before they go to the polls. And if this is information that is available, then they should have it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they'll make up their minds. And this is what I mean around a trust issue. So people are not silly. They'll watch the news footage, they'll listen to it, they'll read it in the papers, and they'll make up their mind of whether or not they trust it.
I also thought, disingenuous to hold a press conference. Because there was obviously an agreement that at 5 o'clock, the starter's gun would go off and the SFO would send out its press statement, and Winston will get to stand there, Winston Peters will get to stand there and take control of this situation by having his own press conference to announce the outcome of the Serious Fraud Office. Again, I wonder if that would have been the same scenario had it been different players for a start. And the other thing I just want to say is utterly extraordinary. I didn't hear mentioned at that press conference, and someone can tell me, because to be truthful, I was on air at the time, didn't hear the entire press conference. But as far as I can tell, he didn't mention the court, the previous court proceedings, the gagging.
No, so that only came out about an hour and a half
and
afterwards.
And I just feel that's, you know, that's, again, limiting the flow of information.
So where does this leave New Zealand First and Winston Peters? I like to bring a little bit of history to every one of our podcasts. And my flash was Custer's last stand, right? You got George Custer. He, during the Civil War, had his horse shot out from under him 11 times.
Poor horse.
Poor horses. Horses.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he kept on fighting. And there's an allegory I'm drawing here between Winston Peters, right?
He's the minister of horses, isn't
he? He has fought, exactly. He has fought on and fought on. This time, though, I feel, you know, do you feel that, though, that this is Little Bighorn? He's surrounded, he's on a hill, he's making his last stand, and no one's coming to rescue him?
Yeah, and he does what he does in those situations, which is just increase his attack. And you got to hand it to him. I mean, it takes a certain amount of gall to do that, doesn't it?
Custer fought from the front as well. We know what happened to him.
And he's a lot of his issues have been taken away from him, though, right? The immigration, the go-to line on immigration is gone because we don't have it. So a lot of his sort of stump speech is not there. And he's just not getting the airtime. And I think last night was an example of it when there was just one question, which was essentially targeted towards him. And in previous debates over other years, you would have had him as being the kingmaker. I don't think I've heard anybody talk about him being the kingmaker so far this election.
When you're on 2%, you just can't run that argument, can
you?
Well,
no, you're not on 2%. If you look at the One News Colmar Brunton poll, when you were lucky, you were on 2%.
Yes, I was averaging over the campaign.
Yeah, but in the last three One News Colmar Bruntons, if my memory serves me correctly, it's something like 1.9%, 2.4%, and then the most recent one down to 1%. What I'm going to be interested in is, because they're polling every week now, they've told us, we'll get a poll next week, which one is assumes would have taken in this sort of fractious period, to see what the trend is there, whether he's got to bounce back from coming out all guns blazing.
He'll have the minor party leaders debate as well.
Yeah,
he?
And the thing that really interests me about that is that initially, he was not going to be involved in the News Hub miners debate, and then all of a sudden he wants in.
He so needs the worm. He needs to bring back the worm.
Advance New Zealand wanted that debate too. We haven't seen a result yet, but the courts are deciding whether
Advance
New Zealand...
should be coming out any minute now.
Yes. Yeah. I've got a text in, but I haven't heard any response yet. But yeah, the Advance New Zealand, what do we make of the debate? Things, I mean, if Winston can get back, can you know, force his way into that debate, should Advance New Zealand get a place?
Well, it depends on the criteria set by the network, because some of them have set a clear criteria that you have to either have polled at a certain amount or you have to have had an elected member in one of the last two terms. I'm mashing up the different criteria, but you set your criteria. I am of the belief that the channel has to have, or the broadcast agency has to have some editorial control over decisions.
The Americans have a debate commission, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. That set the rules.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
we
can't take many other lessons from their debate this week. It was a bit of a shocker. But I do think that there's a possibly a call or a good case to be made for either the networks or the media getting together in some way and ironing this out in terms of getting a good straight criteria in. I don't want to take away the media independence of having your own debate and doing what you want to do, but we've had this problem for many, many years now under MMP with these smaller parties. We've had court cases, yep. Peter Dunn, Colin Craig, and others. Māori Party had convinced TVNZ that they should get in because they were electorate-based, and Billy Te Kahika is making a similar call. And so I just wonder whether the media needs to either get together or to straighten out get the criteria right.
I think the editorial independence is the bottom line on all this, but I can tell you, hot off the press,
what do you got?
Advance New Zealand lost. they are not being included in this debate.
I was going to say, pause, let us all put our bets down, but too late.
Sorry.
We don't know on what basis,
we? Don't know
do
on what basis, okay. But no, just simply that Advance New Zealand lost. Which is interesting because, as you say, the last time this happened exactly for a News Hub debate was when I was producing the programme. It's been Friday afternoon in court and Colin Craig won.
Yes, the uninvited debate guest.
Yes, on the basis that, inclusivity wins, that you just have to make room because democracy is so important.
But that was 2014, right? And the brain library is not working fast enough to know exactly what that decision was based on. You might remember, but 2014, we know that the Conservatives were polling a hell of a lot higher than any party fronted by Jamie Lee Ross and Billy Te Kahika. I mean, in the final wash there, they got in the 3.9s from memory in 2014. So they were, in essence, a bigger player. That's before the demise of Colin Craig leading up to the 2017 election, so they had more of a presence.
The judge's ruling was very much on the basis that the debates can have such an impact, and that to deny someone the chance when there's so much at stake, that they should have the go. So it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see the ruling.
Billy Te Kahika has been in an electorate debate. I watched him this week in the Te Tai Tukaro debate on Māori television. So he's getting airtime.
He is, and I'd just like to say one thing about Advance New Zealand. Look, they were at, and we're going to play a clip, but we haven't got it out, from the debate I hosted in Epsom this week. And bless her, the Advance New Zealand candidate, did her best, and she's new to politics, and this is one of the, things where it's drawing in people. But, she sat there on stage and said, Agenda 2021 from the United Nations means that the UN is coming to control our water, they will own our homes next year, and raised issues about mandatory vaccination.
Where did she get that from? Her 5G internet connection?
Yeah. Have you read Agenda 2021? She said, and I was like, yes, I have. She said, well, the UN is going to own our homes. And I said, no, it does not say that. I mean, I just put that out there to people, that if you are wondering about where your anti-establishment vote goes, then just be careful.
Do some research.
And that's the thing, right? They'll use it now. For them, it won't be a bad thing that they've lost in court. They'll go and say that this is a conspiracy against democracy and
Steep
all sorts
state,
of things.
Mate. Her last line, I kid you not, was the UN is going to own our homes. And this is not a conspiracy. I've seen it on the internet.
Well, the UN could pay my mortgage.
That's literally what she's quite happy about. All right, guys, wrap it up. Any final comments to throw? What are we looking at next week in the campaign? We, as you say, it's alive now.
There's a press debate. There's the press debate coming up.
The Show Me the Money debate.
Yeah, the Show Me the Money debate. And, I mean, these are coming in quick succession, really, for these leaders, especially when you're on the campaign trail trying to keep across all the issues and prep. And I thought you could tell last night that Judith Collins is prepped, because she called Paddy Gow out on the fact that he used an exact same question from the 2017 debate. So she'd clearly been swatting up.
The one you produced, Lisa. All right, guys, thank you for your time, and thanks for listening, everybody. You can, of course, subscribe and follow Caucus on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can watch us on YouTube as well on the RNZ page. Mā te wā, we will see you next week.